Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you all for being here. I'm Crosby Kemper, the director of the Kansas City Public Library. This is part of an ongoing series that the American Public Square is doing in, at the moment, two locations at UMKC on national issues and here at the library on local Kansas City-oriented issues. The next one will be on the streetcar, and we hope you'll come to hear that. And tonight, of course, is about the airport. And now I want to introduce the man who has created the American Public Square, originally the Village Square in Florida, and the Village Square here, but it's today the American Public Square that the library is partnering with, very proudly partnering with. Alan is the distinguished professor of public policy at UMKC. He is was President Obama's first ambassador to Portugal. He's a lawyer by profession. Was general counsel and assistant insurance commissioner for the state of Florida, general counsel to the U.S. House of Representatives Commission on Administrative Review, and legislative director for David Obey, a very well-known member of Congress, and a commissioner for the city of Tallahassee. Alan has pioneered the art of civil dialogue, which is, of course, why after Governor Bush and Senator Rubio got into it, he had to leave Florida and come here. And also, Alan has won the Florida Wildlife Federation Fund honor of champion for climate change, and so he also had to leave Florida and come to Kansas City to find some climate change. Sorry. Every introduction has to have a really bad joke. That's a law around here. But ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure and my honor to introduce Ambassador Alan Katz.
Good evening, everyone. I want to thank you all for coming tonight. This is, as Crosby said, the first in a series of four programs that we're doing in partnership with the library. And we're very pleased to be a partner with the Kansas City Public Library, because basically this is a place that does such a remarkably good job in terms of bringing throughout the city of Kansas City a wide variety of different issues. And we think, therefore, that they are, we're fortunate to have them as a partner, and I want to thank Crosby for his leadership in this area, and I want to thank Kerry Coogan, who has the disadvantage of having been a former student of mine, but the advantage is she's currently the director of programming here, and she's also a member of the board of the American Public Square. I also want to thank BNIM, who is the sponsor for tonight's event. I'd like to also, we got a few people that are assisting us tonight that I want to introduce. We have our roving reporter. That means the person who's going to be taking questions in the back. That's Jeff Fendorf. Okay, and he along with other volunteers are going to be picking up fact checks and questions for the panel, which I'll talk to you about in just a minute. I also want to introduce Tom Burns and Scott Curtis. They're over here. They're UMKC librarians, and they are our fact checkers for tonight. They will use their knowledge of the topic and a variety of databases available to help them find the answer to your question. And they have a way of signaling to the moderator when there's a fact check that needs to be addressed. Now, I say that for those of you who've never been to one of our events, we believe that facts matter. And if someone says something that you don't think is factually correct, you will have an opportunity to signal one of our volunteers. They will bring you a fact check form. You fill out what it is. It will be taken to our fact checkers. This is all in real time. And they will then let us know whether it's there. Someone's already raising his hand, but we're not quite to fact checks yet, okay? But we'll get there in a minute, okay?
Here's some alleged facts.
What's that?
We did hear some alleged facts.
Yeah, okay. We just do. Okay, I understand that. But the point is that what we will do is if you have a fact check, if you think something is not correct, you raise your hand, someone will bring you a fact check form, and you may fill it out. Also, I'd like to acknowledge two of our board members that are here tonight, Ward Katz and Vin Van Klinken. They are our civility bell monitors. Now, we also, in addition to having fact checkers, we have civility bells. There's far too much conversation that goes on about contentious issues that is uncivil, and we don't need that. So in case someone is uncivil in their language or in their tone, you will hear the following. That means whoever is speaking needs to stop speaking. And at that moment, we will attempt to sort of bring things back down to where we need to be and continue the conversation. Our procedure for taking questions, and if you have questions, because we're going to turn this into a conversation as opposed to anything else, which we hope the audience will want to participate in, it's going to be a little different. Normally, most of our events we have are dinners, and so people are seated around tables. Well, we don't have tables tonight, so what you're going to do is you're going to raise your hand, and someone's going to bring you a clipboard, and they're going to bring you a clipboard and a pen, and you write it down. Whatever your question is, whatever your fact check is, it will be taken and put through the process. And one final thing, we don't have any clapping in the middle of the program, okay? And the reason for that is that we have found that people who like to throw out red meat lines that get applause from someone sound really stupid when no one applauds. And we don't think that it really adds much to the overall debate. So consequently, we ask you all to sort of, you know, greet the panelists, and you may, if you think the program was worth your applause at the end, we would love that. But otherwise, our hope is that what you're going to do is you're going to participate and you're going to get something from it. Now, we believe very strongly in civil discourse. So that's kind of the basis of the American public square. And so much so that we went back looking for, because we believe this is part of the tradition of America, we went back and we found that George Washington, the father of our country, in 1759 wrote a book. And the book is The Rules of Civility. And so we'd like to take a few of these rules of civility out to start our evenings, just to give you an idea of what was going on in 1759. And the first one is, every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present, which sounds like it makes sense. The second one, in the presence of others, sing not to yourself with a humming noise, nor drum with your fingers or feet. That's sort of something we hope that we didn't have to point out, but we thought we would. And finally, show nothing to your friend that may affright him. So with that as our basic framework, I'm going to go up here now, and I would like for Steve Vacra to join me on the stage. He's the first panelist that we have. Steve is a staff writer for The Pitch. Steve has been reporting in Kansas City since 2005. He's worked at the Lawrence Journal World, the Kansas City Business Journal, and for the last 2.5 years, The Pitch. He covers local government, business, development, and criminal justice issues, and has written numerous articles on the evolution of the discussion around the airport. Please, thank you for being here. Help me welcome Steve. Okay. So Steve, since you're a reporter and therefore objective, mm-hmm. right? What we want you to do is this. Can you give us a sort of a rundown as to sort of where are we now in this process as the airport issue continues to sort of unfold in our community?
Right, so where we are right now is Southwest Airlines and the city came back and had a public hearing a couple months ago where they revealed that they believe that the cost to do a single terminal would actually be less than the cost to do a renovation of the existing three terminals, which was news for a couple of different reasons. One of the main reasons was because the Airport Terminal Advisory Group had evaluated the proposals, and one of the things that they had believed about a year ago was that the renovation would actually cost less, would be more cost effective than, at least initially, than rebuild and overhaul into a single terminal. At that meeting, they didn't have any cost estimates. There was also a recent tour that the Airport Committee, which is a subset of the Kansas City Council, they went on a tour of KCI, which I joined them for a couple months ago. And they asked again, you know, are there any cost estimates so that the public can feel comfortable with the assertion that a single terminal would cost less than a renovation? And they said, well, we might get those at the end of the year. I saw a document with the city yesterday that suggested that in January those cost estimates might finally become public. And so that's going to be a pretty significant step in the evolution of all
this. When you say, are they going to do cost estimates on renovation vis-a-vis a new terminal?
Right. There are members of the city council who want that comparison to be known so that the public, you know, can understand what that difference is, because that's one of the big sticky issues in this whole discussion is, you know, what's it going to cost and how is it going to be paid for? The dollars and cents are going to be a pretty large step in the evolution of this discussion.
When they've looked at this, have they talked about the issue of If you do, they've closed, Terminal A is closed, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and it was closed not because of its problems, but because of the consolidation between US Air and American. Is that correct?
Right, that's part of it. I mean, to spread them out among so many gates would be pretty costly if you can move them into two. And
But then in two, apparently, today meets the demand. In other words, we have enough capacity in
right.
those two terminals?
Correct.
So when they talk about renovating, are they talking about renovating three terminals or two terminals?
That's not clear to my knowledge. That's not been made clear. So at this point, I think that's largely unknown.
Okay, well, let me ask someone else to join our conversation here. John Stevens is the president of Rock Hill Strategies, an executive management and affairs firm, and is currently serving as interim executive director of the Kansas City, Kansas Chamber of Commerce. And he's a career marketing and communications executive. John has served in leadership roles at leading advertising agencies and taken on interim business and strategic planning roles to transform civic and business organizations. Please help me welcome John Stevens. So, John, tell me, what do you think is the role of the airport in the community?
Well, it's an economic development tool. It's an economic engine. It is a major piece of infrastructure for our community, and not just Kansas City, Missouri, but for the Kansas City metropolitan area.
Okay, and again, you know, so help me with this. We have an airport that basically there's nothing within really 3 hours. In other words, so basically, to use an old phrase, you know, we're the only phone company in town, right? It's not like someone's going to say, well, you know, I'm going to go to Wichita because they have a nicer airport, right? So the question is that what does, aside from getting people in and getting people out, and from what I've seen from the Southwest folks, what they're saying in effect is cost is the driver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in other words, is there evidence that indicates that if we had a nicer airport, that we would get more flights in here?
No. Certainly. I mean, there's no evidence, there's no correlation or very little correlation that most people have been able to prove that a new terminal anywhere generates increased ticket sales, increased economic activity. You might draw more people from some of the other feeder airports that are pulling additional traffic, Des Moines, Omaha, some of those. But you're not doing that. And then conversely, a new terminal does not correlate directly to increased ticket prices.
Okay, so we can get to that in a minute. But then so how is it an economic driver if it doesn't bring in additional flights, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is it an economic driver?
Well, it's an economic driver in transportation infrastructure for the community. It is a piece of our infrastructure that we need to keep viable and functional and operating well into the future.
So it's more of a functional, as an advocate, you're sort of seeing it functionally as opposed to anything else.
Absolutely. Primarily, it is a functional piece of infrastructure for our community.
Okay. Well, let's get our final panel member up here, Kevin Koster. He's the president and chief purpose officer for Scopus, a brand evolution and strategic marketing practice. Kevin started the SaveKCI.org website as a forum for conversation and an open and civil exchange of ideas, which is what we endorse, of course, an open and civil exchange of ideas. Kevin served on the 24-member KCI Airport Terminal Advisory Group formed by Mayor Sly James. Kevin, please join me on the stage, and please help me welcome Kevin. So, Kevin, do you agree with John that the airport is an economic driver for the community?
I don't know that it's a driver per se, other than, you know, obviously we have to have one. I think it's a driver in that if our airport doesn't get in the way of airlines increasing service and increasing the accessibility of especially business people to get conveniently from point A to point B, then that regard, yeah, it is a driver.
Okay, but we have an airport. We're not talking about should we have an airport, right?
Right.
We have an airport, and we have X number of flights that come in and out, and we have no indication that changing the airport will increase the traffic. Is that, I mean, everyone, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to, is that consistent with what you think, Steve?
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that.
Okay, and I think that all, the numbers that I saw, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, John, that the cost per passenger differential between building $1 billion, assuming that's the number, or maybe it's $1.2 billion, maybe it's whatever it is, it's a lot of money. It will go from $5 and change to so close to $15 and change on a per passenger cost.
$5, $6 up to $12 to $15 has been many estimates.
Okay, so we're talking about, so the most conservative estimate would be to double it, right? It will double the per passenger cost. Kevin, who do you think is going to pay for that?
Well, the airlines.
Okay.
No, I mean, what happens, the airlines...
They have to pay for it because that's the deal.
Right. The airlines initially absorb the cost.
Right.
It's true that the it doesn't directly impact fares in that... They don't. If the cost per employment goes from $5 to $15, that fare doesn't automatically go up $10. It's based on demand. It's based on what people are willing to pay. Where it becomes an issue is, especially with Southwest, it becomes an issue because of the fact that Southwest is the only airline that does connecting flights here. And so when Southwest, for example, you know, we just focus on how much does it cost to fly nonstop to Orlando. Meanwhile, Southwest is flying somebody else from, say, Portland, Oregon to Orlando. Well, that plane could stop in Kansas City. It could stop in Oklahoma City. It could stop in St. Louis, Omaha, Chicago, Dallas. Part of Southwest's profit strategy is, okay, well, I can pivot this plane for $5 a passenger in Kansas City versus $15 a passenger here. They decide to pivot it here, park it here overnight, whatever. That gives us a nonstop flight we wouldn't have had otherwise. So there's a risk that if we drive that cost up to $15, we just simply lose the nonstop flight because Southwest can move that plane someplace else.
John, does that concern you?
Not really. I think what we're looking at, the other thing we have to look at among peer airports, we're not... And I think we could all agree, we're not comparing our airport to O'Hare or to any of these other major hubs. We're comparing it to Austin, Indy, San Bernardino, Nashville, et cetera. And within those 18 to 20 peer set cities, if we completely leapfrogged and outpaced on those boarding fees, I would have a very big concern. But everything I have heard from a major innovation, new terminal, et cetera, would put us maybe in the top 8, somewhere in that range. And I don't know that would have, it is much more based on market demand here and business growth, population growth, driving traffic, than it would be that employment fee.
Steve, does that make sense to you, what you're hearing?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think it makes a little bit of sense to just do a little thumbnail sketch of how this thing is paid for. I mean, regardless of what shape it takes, mm-hmm. You know, the city issues airport revenue bonds, and the way bonds work, you know, most people probably know, but you know, these get sold to investors. There's cash up front to do the work that needs to be done, and then those investors are paid back over time. In this case, and this is a misconception that's been very difficult to clear up, but it's, you know, worth restating as many times as necessary, is these bonds aren't repaid directly by taxpayers. So you're not going to look at your property tax bill if you're a Kansas City, Missouri resident and see a line item in there for airport. You're not going to see sales taxes increase to pay these things back. The way they're paid back is through airlines as well as, you know, other operations that take place in the ordinary course of airport business. That includes things like parking, that includes things like concessions. And concessions is definitely part of this debate. You know, the Kansas City Aviation Department would argue that they don't make very much money off of incentive or off of concessions. And if you visit the airport and you go beyond the security gate, you can see why in a lot of cases. So it has to get paid back somehow, and it's not directly through taxpayers.
Okay, but answer this question for me. I've looked at the fiscal reports that are issued by the airport, they're making money. And in other words, last 5 years, they've lost money three of the last 5 years, but when they lost money, they lost a couple million, and when they made money, they made $8, $10, $15 to $20 million. So is this one of those things where if it's not broke, you don't fix it?
I don't believe so. We have to, based on the 2014 agreement between the airlines with the, I think it's commonly referred to as Exhibit K, that was an agreement between the airport and the airlines. Basically, it stipulated to the effect of that major improvements are necessary to KCI. What form that took was left completely open, but that was a piece of the discussion. And we're looking at an airport that was designed in the 60s, opened in 72, and has had some renovations and one relatively major renovation that concluded in 2004. But I think there's still a lot of infrastructure that needs to be looked at.
Okay, so is it fair to say among all three of you that the question is not if, the question is what? Is that a fair? Kevin, you agree with that?
I do, to the extent that we have to remember that that renovation that John spoke of was essentially a complete gutting of the terminal, so that everything that the passenger sees was not there before 2004 or maybe 1999, whenever it started. So the airport, from the passenger experience level, is not 40 years old. It's 15 years old at the oldest. So we're dealing with a 15-year-old airport from the standpoint of customer experience, built within a 40-year-old shell. There's some infrastructure issues and that type of thing, and that's what on the task force we were trying to get our arms around, in terms of which of these are legit, which of these, you know, can be fixed some other way. And that's when I think it was a $500 or $600 million figure got tossed out by the aviation department, saying if we go in and fix, basically rip up all the roads, redo all the leaks, run all the new pipes, fix all those types of things and bring them all up to new, it'd be about $500 million, something like that, to do everything on their wish list. So it becomes really more of a, what can we do with what we have? And there's also an element of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You know, when you look at the things that make KCI as it is a unique experience from a passenger standpoint, the things that, just like, you know, the sports complex was the design ahead of its time. It's still a great place to take in a venue. Likewise, KCI is a very unique experience. And so it's how can you get what you need to bring it up to the, you know, fix its shortcomings, but can we do that without throwing out everything we love about it?
Jeff, we got any questions from our audience here?
Yes, we have several back here. The first one, what are the most important goals for the completed airport project?
Okay, who wants to start with that one?
Well, I'll jump right in. I can tell you what I believe the task force and what the airport that first started studying it, they said it was efficiency and convenience, that those boiled down of all the various factors, efficiency and convenience were the two, number one, number two, 1A, 2A pieces, factors that they were considering in looking at all the variables in KCI.
Convenience for whom?
Convenience for the end customer, which would be the flying public.
I don't want the passenger.
And efficiency would imply efficiency for the airlines primarily in conducting their business.
Okay. And we just want to jump in on that. If not, I'll go to the next one.
Well, when Southwest came here and testified, they said they could fly into a trailer park for all they cared. It was all, if there were 180 people that wanted to get on an airplane, they can get them on and off in the time frame they wanted to do it. They didn't care what they pulled up to.
Okay. I'm surprised, Jeff, they don't do that more often.
Yeah. I'm surprised. Jeff, you got another question for us?
Well, and actually, I think those answers play right into this next question. What is the allocation between convenience, functionality, and other benefits?
Okay. Who wants to start with that one? Steve, do you want to take it?
Well, I would say convenience from the public standpoints, you know, for people who don't see what goes on behind the scenes at an airport with baggage handling and all those things, convenience is probably going to be the paramount issue. And with Kansas City, there's this, I sense that there's this sentimentality about the current Kansas City airport by a large segment of the public who believe that And accurately, I would say, having traveled to a lot of different airports, that KCI has a level of convenience that is not easily found in other airports. So for it's an airport where you can park nearby, you can walk up to the gate, you can get through the gate pretty quickly because there's so many, and you compare that with another airport that you know with other airports you might go through. One example that always comes to my mind, because this is where I grew up, is in Denver, which was, it's a very sleek designed airport. It's very, you know, there's all kinds of shopping that you can do beyond the security checkpoints. It has a lot of the things that Kansas City doesn't have. It looks a lot more welcoming than Kansas City does. However, you know, particularly post 9/11, they had to change the security outlay, and one of the things that they had to do is, you know, they had to do a couple of different security choke points. Before, you could get to the gates a lot easier. Now, you know, if you're walking from Terminal A from where you do your ticketing, everybody goes through one checkpoint, which isn't to say that there's only one you know, metal detector and so forth. But, I mean, there's several of them, but everybody stands in one line. And, you know, if you've traveled in Denver during the holidays, you know how precarious that security line can be. And that's largely not something you really have to deal with in Kansas City, certainly not to the level of a place like Chicago, Denver, LaGuardia, places like that. And so that's really kind of what's captured the public's imagination about this discussion is, if we tweak with this airport too much, or if we build it into a single terminal, are we going to feel like we're going through Midway? And that's, you know, for most of the people in this crowd and beyond, that's going to be the paramount issue.
Before we go on to that, I want to check in with our fact checkers. Do we have anything there that you want to pass on? Nope. Just so you know. Okay, that's good. I mean, so far we seem to be on fact. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
If I may say, I agree with Steve that I believe, as someone who's been flying for 20 plus years out of KCI and pretty frequent flyer, there is a great convenience. And I would say that there is a great convenience until it's not convenient. And when it's not convenient, when there's situations of off-peak travel, when there's a delay, when there are other things, I think many people would recognize, and we hear it a lot, that suddenly it becomes a very inconvenient airport in many ways, and that is off-peak travel when you're trying to get a cup of coffee, or peak travel and a delay and you need to go back out to use a restroom, or all of those things. Once again, I don't think that that plays into renovation or new terminal, but I do think that it is a valid discussion that we cannot inherently assume that a new terminal will be less convenient on any level than this terminal. I think that is a common assumption and sort of a misnomer. And to use the Denver analogy, you know, Denver is five times the size of KCI. Approximately.
I don't know for sure, but that's...
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. And I would just sort of say, you mentioned the Denver airport. If memory serves me right, it came in at well over $1 billion over budget and came in approximately 2 or 3 years late from being completed. So my question to those, actually to John, would be, okay, we're not Denver, and we're not... And one always hopes that you learn from the, you know, from where I used to live for a long time. There was a man who used to say there's very little education in the second kick of a mule. And I think the idea really is that, so hopefully we can learn from some of those experiences. But the reality is, you know, these are very complicated projects. This is not something that, you know, three guys in a pickup truck go out there and do. What, you know, so here's my question. If we're going to do what you would like to see us do, and you and others, and we have a passenger facility charge, which is capped by federal law. Mm-hmm. How are we really going to pay for all this? Especially if, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. I would not be shocked, nor would I think would most people in this room, if a project of this size came in over budget. You know, I don't think any of us would sort of like be like shocked that it would happen. And not because people don't want to do it right, it's just because there are lots of things that you can't anticipate and they happen.
Right. No, you know, certainly. But I would say that's where, on a couple different levels. One, that's where you have to be relatively conservative when you're looking at what you're constructing, how you're going to construct it, right-sizing it both for the construction costs, potential overruns, and the ongoing operational costs and functional costs of it. And once again, I would say we need to look, you know, I believe the 2030 projection for KCI is 35 gates needed by 2030. And so in looking at either a major renovation or a new terminal project, either way, we really need to be looking at what has been successful in Indianapolis, what has been successful in Austin, much more peer-sized airports. And many of those are also ranked as some of the most convenient, consumer-friendly airports in the country.
Okay. Well, Kevin, when you and I first talked, you talked about how you got involved in this. And I think it's an interesting story. And if you'd be kind enough to share it with everyone, because I think it also goes to sort of part of the evolution of this conversation.
Well, actually, it was kind of an accident. I saw several years prior to this initial proposal, I saw something in the paper, I think maybe 2008. There was a proposal to relocate the terminal south of the current east-west runway and build it off 152. And I thought, well, this doesn't make any sense. We're about to open a new rental car facility on the other side of the runway. You have all these hotels and businesses. As nobody talked to them about it, I'm sure the Marriott would probably have an issue with you putting the terminal on the other side of the runway. And I said, okay, well, this will just die under its own weight. I never heard anything past that. And then it was the Saturday before Easter in 2013, and I'd promised my wife that I was not going to go into the office that day. And so I had the morning to kill. I said, I haven't read the paper in a while. And there was an article in the front page of the paper, I think, saying that there was a new terminal design out and that the city had let out a contract for $117,000 to a PR firm to sell the city on the idea that we needed a new terminal. And as a guy that's kind of involved with PR, I'm thinking, okay, well, we only get hired if the thing can't sell itself. And so I started looking into it. And I said, okay, what are the reasons? I must be missing something because I kind of like the airport the way it is. And so I'm reading along the reasons for building a new airport. And they said things like poor passenger experience. I said, wait a minute, that's the opposite. I started going down all the list of reasons that they were talking about why we needed a new airport. And I thought maybe they were talking about some other city and it wasn't our airport. And so that's when I started, okay, this makes no sense. And I looked up, I went to the Convention and Visitors Association website. And on the website, it said, or one of the reasons why you should bring your convention to Kansas City was because of our great airport. It talked about speed of access, talked about the fact that since we didn't have a hub, our airfares were lower than medium-sized markets that had hubs, like Cincinnati, that had seen airfares skyrocket. And so you had, on one hand, the Convention Association saying, come here because of our airport. Then you had the airport saying that the airport was horrible. And here's, I'm reading in the Star article, there was nothing at all saying, asking, you know, these other side of the questions. You know, nobody was pushing back, challenging the aviation department on its reasons for a new airport. And so I had a couple of, you know, I had, like I said, the afternoon to kill. And so I just threw together a quick blog and asked the question myself and threw it out there and didn't think anything of it. And unfortunately, I didn't take the extra 2 minutes to privatize who had registered the website. And it got crawled, and somebody, I think it was Dave Helling, saw that somebody had written about KCI. I happened to be in the same building as Sam Graves, former chief of staff, so he suspected there was a connection there. He posted about it, and Tony's Kansas City picked up on that, and by the end of the day on Monday, I'd had 6 interviews from various media sources, and I called my wife. I go, that blog probably wasn't such a good idea. And here I am.
Yeah, well,
2 years later.
Okay, so Jeff, you got another question for us?
Yeah, I've got quite a few.
Okay, let's see what we got up there.
What specific problems have been cited as the need for renovations?
Well, I was going to say, John, you want to take a shot at that?
Well, I can tell you what's been discussed in the airport advisory and in city council and You know, there's been dozens of hearings and discussions on this, and what generally is cited is that the 95 to 2004 renovation, which I believe in 2015 dollars was about a $420 million. It was 200 and some million dollars at the time, $420 million in today's dollars, did a good job of a lot of the inside the walls, superficial kind of improvements and upgrades, but there's still lingering questions about the age of the overall shell of those buildings, the below-grade infrastructure, as I believe Kevin mentioned, and then just overall kind of the overall functionality, and there's been a lot of discussion about the cost-effectiveness of continuing to run that many multiplier of facilities within two terminals even.
Okay, well, since Steve, you raised in the several of your articles the question that you felt that the Aviation Authority was being, let's see, how did you put it, somewhat less than candid, or maybe you were a little more direct than that, with information that it was forthcoming. And several people have said to me when they heard about this program we were going to do tonight, well, one of the reasons that things look so bad at the airport is they're trying to just let things go so that people will support a new airport. So you've been probably the reporter that spent more time chasing all of these things to earth. Tell me about, A, whether you think that the second part of my question, which is the conspiracy question, is real. And so, and first of all, has the aviation department been cherry-picking the information?
Well, I'll take the first part, which was the latter part of your question first. But
I'm confused now, which is what, but go ahead.
You know, like with any conspiracy theory, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So I haven't uncovered some smoking gun where the aviation department's hatched some plan to make the airport look shabby and drive public opinion in the opposite direction from where it's been going to get people to really realize, no, we need to do something new. I don't have anything like that. The last citizen satisfaction survey that was submitted to that was presented by Kansas City suggested in most areas of the city that scores were trending upwards. Most of them by pretty small increments, but there was one area that really stood out, and that was the airport, which has generally rated very popularly in the citizen satisfaction surveys over the years, even as recently as last year, started to take like a 7% nosedive, which in the context of the citizen satisfaction survey results was a pretty remarkable turn. People more so in the past found that it wasn't very clean, that it wasn't very well organized, and so that was a bit of a departure in the trend. So I don't know. I mean, we would have to get somebody from aviation up here and maybe under oath to say whether that's what they're trying to do. And as far as them cherry-picking data, there's a lot of instances of that. And I think that, you know, I think I can say objectively that that's really hurt the public cause, the public push that the aviation department in the city has made to build a case for a single terminal airport. One example from a report that I did last year was they were saying that the EPA had concerns that the airport was violating a regulation about how much de-icing runoff there could be coming off the runways. And I checked the specific regulation that they cited with the EPA, and they said, we have no idea what they're talking about. They couldn't find any instance, they couldn't find that regulation that was being cited. Another example was, you know, they implied that they couldn't do the pre-check, which is where if you're frequent enough a flyer and you apply for this what's called pre-check, you can sort of get through security a little bit faster than the rest of us. And they said that, you know, the way the concourses are laid out, there's not enough room for that. But then pre-check suddenly started appearing later on that year. And when I asked TSA about that, they said, well, it has nothing to do with any rule changes. It's just we've got around to doing it for KCI. So, you know, the aviation department has probably gotten a little bit further out ahead of itself on this issue than maybe it's wanted to, and has probably cost some points in the PR discussion around this issue.
Okay, well, Kevin, you were on the mayor's advisory committee, and obviously there had to be a lot of interaction with the aviation department while you were there. And while you may have been one of the dissenting members from the consensus, what was your experience with the aviation department?
They were very selective in what they shared. There was one at one point, one thing in particular, we were told that we had more security checkpoints in the three airports in New York combined, which didn't take, I mean, I know you have professional fact checkers, but that was one that was pretty easy to run down. And there was another one where we were told that somebody questioned why you had Delta and Southwest in the same terminal, because you know you have basically your two biggest carriers in one terminal, and then when Delta merged with Northwest, why didn't we move Delta out of B into Terminal C to relieve the crowding and the parking problem instead of moving Northwest into Terminal B? And the aviation director told the committee, said, well, that just happened. I mean, they just kind of almost like they just moved over in the dark of night, and we just came in one day, and they were there. And which
I'm not sure I would have said that if I were him, but go ahead.
Well, that's and that was, I mean, that was stated right, and said, oh, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Okay, well, I'll take his word for it. Then I asked somebody else, actually during the airport tour, took one of the other aviation department guys aside, and I said, well, they were working on the move combining U.S. Airways and United, I think. And American, thank you. And they were working on trying to do that configuration. I said, well, how long does that take? He says, well, it's been taking, we've been working on this for almost a year. I said, well, how long did it take to figure out the Delta and Northwest mergers? Oh, that was a total pain to coordinate all that and figure out when we were going to move them over and do all that other stuff. So, I mean, they knew they were moving into B, and it was a deliberate decision to do that.
John, listening to this as an advocate, and obviously the aviation authority is the one that, you know, we all ought to be able to look to give us sort of, at least from a technical standpoint, what the deal is. What's your reaction to all this?
Well, you know, obviously I have no knowledge, much like Steve said, on what the, you know, what the aviation department has, you know, done. I would say the early discussions about a new terminal or any other ideas were certainly from someone who's worked in PR as well, were certain missteps. But I think you put those aside and you look pretty clear-eyed at where we are. I think it may have backed into it, but where we are now, I think, is a positive process of really clear-eyed looking at what should be done for the airport and where we should go for the future. Once again, we may have backed into it. And as far as the airport staff, you know, I've worked with them in my time with Visit KC and in business, and have been in meetings with them where they've talked about tourism and et cetera. And I would say, generally speaking, having never worked with them all that closely, that they do respond to customer complaints. Most recently, the valet parking issue after complaints of overcrowding at Terminal B and access. So I would say that they do respond, but as far as where they move airlines and the consolidation, I do know the consolidation has been pretty significant. There have been some you've gone from multiple airlines down to really four major airlines, and I have no idea how airport authorities deal with that. So I don't know if they did the right decision or not.
Fair enough. We got anything on our fact checkers? Anything to report? Okay, what do we got?
First, I might just mention we're having trouble reading some of the fact-checking questions.
Oh, okay. You all need to write more clearly when you put your fact check.
We apologize if we don't get your question because we couldn't read it. Anyhow, there was a question about the comparisons being made between KCI and Indianapolis and Austin. Is it not true that Indianapolis's new airport came in over budget and caused carrier fees to rise, resulting in fewer flights? I was not able to check the causation of that, but going to Department of Transportation, Bureau of Transportation statistics, I can tell you that there were 37,000 flights through Indianapolis in 2010, and there were 28,500 flights through in 2014, and that is a reduction of 8,500 flights in a year.
Okay, and before we draw too many conclusions, which we can draw from things like that, I think we have numbers that if you look at Kansas City, The reduction in flights in the last, I want to say, 3 to 4 years is somewhere in the neighborhood of 24%. Mm-hmm. Now, some would argue it's consolidation. So there are a variety of different reasons why, but I think that it's important to have that. Yes, sir.
Yes. Also, that there is an, I believe it's an article in the Indianapolis Star headline. This is December 2nd, 2013. Fares have soared, flights have fallen at Indianapolis Airport, which that's a news article that's corroborating similar data to what I was reporting.
The fares have fallen, did you say?
It says fares have soared, flights have fallen.
Oh, okay, thank you. I got to do it. Okay. Okay, so thank you. Jeff, you got a question for us?
Yes, we do. There seemed to be general agreement among the panelists that a new airport in and of itself, or a new terminal in and of itself, would not be a driver of increased passenger numbers. But with other developments that are going on in Kansas City, you know, downtown, the increased or larger conference center, new hotels, can the airport really handle business or increased business that might be driven by other factors?
John? From the numbers I've seen from the independent studies, yes and no, honestly. It's from a total number of gates, I think it's very clear that the airport could fully handle traffic growth. From pre-staging, pre-security, post-security holding areas, some of the other infrastructure, parking, et cetera, I don't know that there's a firm answer that significant growth, if it were to occur, that the current configuration of BC Terminal and where it stands now would necessarily be able to support at the level that I think most of us want it to be if there were significant growth. But once again, I don't know that there, once again, I think the question was, if there's significant economic growth and population growth and tourism growth in the community, then of course traffic would follow if that were to happen. I don't know that there's a clear answer if every aspect of the current configuration would support that.
Okay, it seems to me, Steve, that what you have, we're looking at, there are two pieces that sort of seem to sort of come up out of this conversation. One is, there's a cosmetic notion. In other words, whether you, one, likes or dislikes traveling in and out of our airport, it's hard to argue that it's one of the best-looking airports and with all kinds of different wonderful things inside of it that we've ever seen. At the same time, oftentimes that's the cheapest thing to fix, and the most expensive thing to fix is underground infrastructure. And at the same time, we're sitting there with a huge investment already, not just in underground infrastructure, but roads and rental car for all of these other kinds of things. What's your sense that how people are kind of like, you know, trying to sort of get all those factors fit into one notion for going forward?
In terms of how they reconcile the cosmetic appearance?
What's driving this? What's the real driver here?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Okay, what the question
okay.
Is.
There are certain things you can't. There may be problems that are either there now or on the horizon. In infrastructure, no one ever sees, that really would undermine the efficacy of the airport.
Right.
And then there are those things that people see that they don't like because basically, you know, the bathrooms are not great and basically you can't get a cup of coffee very easily and all these other kinds of things. What's driving this?
They took me on a tour a couple of years ago of the airport and they kind of take you through the underbelly of it. And they'll point to areas where there's some water leaking. And, you know, in the more recent tour that I went on with some members of the city council a couple months ago, there was a puddle from, I think it had rained a lot, quite a bit the night before. And, you know, there was a tunnel underneath Terminal A where there was a puddle that was, you know, suspiciously close to an electrical outlay. So it didn't look good. So there's a lot of stuff that the public doesn't see that doesn't look great. At the same time, I've asked, you know, has any engineer been brought in to evaluate what the cost of doing all this stuff is? And I haven't gotten a satisfactory answer to that. And so, you know, the airport is like any other asset. It's like any of one of your personal assets. If you have an automobile, it's a big investment, so you do the oil changes on time. If you have a house, you do repairs when you need to and do maintenance. And so there's no real denial that there needs to be some work done at KCI. But what shape that takes and how much that costs is just still too very unclear.
So, John, do you think we've done a lousy job in maintaining the airport?
I don't know. I don't know what goes on with operations underneath an infrastructure. But I will say the last renovation was completed in 2005. And as you look, and I think I would maybe take a little issue with the idea of cosmetic being the cheapest. If we're talking flooring, lighting, seats, that sort of cosmetics. But if you're looking at increasing the post-security holding area size, if you're talking about where restrooms are located, if you're talking about those sort of things, I think those might start to be surprisingly expensive. You look at what Southwest has done with pushing out the holding areas a little bit, and they've gained, several feet to increase their holding area size because they have the highest traffic and volume in their areas. They've broken the different areas and decreased their number of security checkpoints. And as you look at that, I think that that's probably surprisingly expensive. And as you look at making that probably much more of a long-term permanent fix, and that's once again, I think, where we need independent pricing and independent estimates to really look at what the solutions are.
Okay, well, Kevin, you sat on this mayor's, Blue Ribbon Commission, and you theoretically were part of the group that received all kinds of information about, maintenance, cost of this, cost of that. What's your sense? Your sense that we have a situation where we haven't maintained the airport the way we should have? If you think we haven't, is it because we didn't have the money, or we didn't have the desire, or what do you think it was?
We didn't see anything in specifically that, like what Steve was talking about, where there was some smoking gun someplace. I think the engineering staff up there was very impressive with some of the solutions that they had found to accommodate the building to modern needs and that type of thing. Interestingly, when we took our tour just before that, the PR firm had made sure that there were all sorts of pictures of the flooded Terminal A that made the newspaper a week later. So we asked about that. Asked one of the engineers. I said, "What about this place actually looks a lot cleaner than I expected, because I've seen all these photographs of these water-stained walls, and I have this blog post all ready to go with a picture of this water-stained wall in my 5-year-old parking garage that I was going to put, and I can't find a water-stained wall." He goes, "Well, there's this one." He goes, "Oh, that's just from a toilet. We could fix that if we wanted to." But he said, but it doesn't cause a problem, so it wasn't that big of a deal. And he says, "Well, what about the floods?" He says, "Well, heck, 20 years ago, we used to flood it routinely just to clean it."
Okay.
There wasn't a sense specifically from a deferred maintenance standpoint. I think, one of the things we looked at, though, was going back to a question earlier, one of the convenience issues was, were concessions. And that also touches on something that the aviation department was a little bit holding back on. They said, once you get past security, there's nothing. It's like, well, wait a minute. And I just took their word for it, because at the time I wasn't flying Southwest that much. But the first time I went through the Southwest, there was like 5 or 6 restaurants. There's one has a little bar right next to gate 45 that's 5 feet away. It only had 5 or 6 people at it. And so there are a lot of, could we use more? Maybe. But what they've done is they've gone up in some areas. They've gone vertical instead of trying to push out. And I asked, I think it was Phil Muncy, who's the deputy aviation director, said, have we maxed out the vertical space that we could use? Because the big restaurants right now are vertical, because it's not something we've looked at yet. I said, okay, well, we just talked about a $500 million renovation plan, but we've not looked at, why have we not looked at that? Because we've not been asked to look at that yet. Well, maybe we should look at that.
Okay, Jeff, you got a question for me?
Okay. Sounds so exciting.
Okay.
Sorry.
Only asking the civil ones, though, so go ahead.
Has anyone explored the feasibility of building a consolidated ticketing and security clearance in the central space of the terminals, the area that's now parking?
I can take that on. I know that some of the conceptual massings that I think that they've shared at public forums and that they shared to the airport advisory, I believe there's 4. They narrowed down, the consultants or whoever did it, narrowed it down to really sort of 4 primary options. One was keep terminals B and C and build a central check-in security sort of, you know, lobby between B and C. And the other was building, pushing out in B and C and having two separate sort of consolidated security access points that would push out into ostensibly where the garages are now to some level. And then the two new terminal construction options were, I believe, an I shape generally, that were you walk through a central security and there's gates going to your right and left, and then a walkway, and then gates going to your right or left, or sort of a tree configuration where it goes out into three different kind of corners of it. Those were the four that I believe that they've explored generally from, I think, hundreds of different sort of conceptual sketches with consultants down to those four that they believe would be functional in some capacity.
Okay. Another question for us.
Yes. I think we all know that Southwest Airlines is a major player in this whole situation. So how long is the commitment or contract with Southwest Airlines to stay at KCI?
I think they can leave. Well, I don't know. Someone have an answer to that? Steve, you know?
I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to speculate.
Kevin?
I don't think there is a contract per se. There's a lease agreement with all the airlines that Southwest is kind of the lead negotiator on, and that's what sets the landing fees and all the other stuff. But it applies to all the airlines, and I think that's what expires. They extended it, 2 years?
Yeah.
Kind of just to push through this whole process. They kind of did a little temp extension. I think it runs out in about a year. But if Southwest wanted to pack up tomorrow and just say, hey, we're going to take 20 flights and run them out of Memphis because they've got room down there, they can do it.
Okay, well, let me ask this question. I have here, Kevin, you were on the task force, and I've got a this was an evaluation that was done by the task force members, and it was key performance indicators. And the first one was affordability. And for some reason, affordability, option three, which was the one big terminal, was viewed as more affordable, more convenient, more adaptable, more easily constructed. I'm curious how that group could reach that conclusion based on some of the things we've been talking about.
That would be, this is going to be a little bit on the edge here. That would be called probably stacking the deck. During the entire year and a half of the task force, there were two sessions that you could call deliberative, where the members actually got together and had a chance to exchange ideas and talk about whatever. One of those, the second, that's, you're speaking of the first one. The second one was, we talked about, should we just, this is after they'd renegotiated the lease, those of us who were there, and there were usually about half of us at any of the meetings. Those of us who were there, I believe, decided that as a group, we didn't have enough information to come up with a conclusion at all, and we should just report back to the mayor and say, hey, there's not enough information. You've got this new lease. You got the extension. Southwest is at the table now. Here's everything we've dug up. You guys take from here, and we're done. And then somehow, within a couple of weeks, that all got blown up. We said, no, you're going to stick with this until you come up with a recommendation. Prior to that, the one you're talking about, we were presented with three options, both and a basic renovation of the infrastructure was not one of them. But there was the new terminal option, which had been publicized. There was the option, both two of the options that John mentioned, one that had a centralized security area in the two horseshoes, and then the second or the third option had a centralized security area in each of the two remaining horseshoes, which is something none of us had seen or talked about, and all of a sudden it was thrown up there, okay, which of these three is better? And the general consensus was, well, these other two suck. I mean, at the risk of being uncivil, but it was just, these make no sense.
Yeah, where's the bell, guys? Come on, let's go.
It's like, why would you do, I mean, next to that makes the new terminal look good, but where's the option of just, what happened to the $500 million option? So it was essentially of these choices that you have.
Okay. Okay, but Steve, I want to ask you a question. Our host tonight, when Crosby started talking, he talked about, you know, there were a couple things he said that I actually thought were, that I agreed with, which is more than normally when he and I have a conversation.
Can we fact-check that?
You know, but he said something that I think, that I like each one of the panelists to respond to, because I think it's important. Southwest is the dominant carrier here. If Southwest decided to pack up and leave, we would be in really bad shape. Okay? And when he said that what Southwest want, he did not say what Southwest thinks we should do is what we should do. What he said was it should receive probably greater weight than almost anything else that we consider. What do you think about that?
I think that's not unreasonable. I think that's probably, I mean, that's a very pragmatic approach to it, because you know, you talk about airport serving the customer, a lot of people think, well, those are the people buying tickets to take flights. And yeah, that's true in a sense. But in terms of dollars and cents, you know, your biggest customer really is the airlines. I mean, they can be the most financially affected by whatever decision takes place. And so, yeah, certainly Southwest is at the forefront of the table, and I think they also are very aware of that. So they're going to end up really kind of driving where this thing goes, probably more than anybody else is.
Okay, so Kevin, taking that notion, and Southwest has been one of the few airlines that has consistently made money. While all the other airlines have gone in and out of bankruptcy, Southwest is, you know, is an airline that clearly they know how to run, they know how to get passengers on a plane, off a plane, and they know how to make it all work. If they look up and say, we need a new terminal, this is what we want, this is in the best interest of what we think we can provide here, and you know, the reality is we know we're going to have to pay for part of it until we figure out a way to pass the cost on, what do you say to that?
Again, it boils down to how are we going to pay for it. And if what they're going to bring to the table in terms of helping us pay for it. You know, Delta went to Cincinnati many years ago and said, we want to put a hub here. Mm-hmm. And Cincinnati goes, great. And they came up with $500 million and expanded the terminal. Then Delta filed Chapter 11 and pulled out, and then it got this expanded terminal, and this is after airfares went up. So I absolutely agree that we need to treat them like they're our best customer, because they do provide us with the best service. But just in the same way that, and the one thing that the aviation director said that I totally agreed with is that look at us as like a landlord. Okay, well, if you're leasing space to a tenant, if you really want the tenant to come into the building, you give them everything that you can to help him or her make money, but not to the point to where you're completely subsidizing the business and going out of business yourself, and you can't be a successful landlord. So I think there has to be a balance.
John?
Yeah, I would say that along that analogy, if you view the airport as a landlord, I would view the bond and the fees, which are passed back to the airlines, that's in essence, you are doing tenant improvements and you're passing on an increased rent to those businesses. So those airlines are paying an increased rent to be at an improved facility. If you want to follow that analogy, and if they ask for it, that's, I think, what you do to an extent, as long as you're still following the other tenants, which are also still being convenient for the end consumer, which are all of us.
Right, which basically becomes the next, we'll call it rent subsidy. Because at some point, it's just like going back to the office building, Southwest is only going to be willing to pay so much in rent, so much in tenant improvement, before it's like, okay, you know, it no longer makes sense for me to move into your office building unless you get somebody else to make up the difference in that rent. And that's when it gets passed along and increased parking costs and increased other fees that do get passed along to the passenger. It doesn't hit the airline, the ticket itself. I mean, the airfare doesn't change, but parking goes from $20 to $35. And I forget, there were several airports we looked at. I forget which ones they were that had really some pretty dramatic.
No, and that's where certainly I believe that this process, going through advisory committees, studies, and all of it are incredibly important, because we cannot become the highest priced landing fees in America or even among mid-sized airports. We have to stay competitive within that set. That doesn't mean we need to be 18th, but it means that we cannot be outpricing or outkicking. But once again, ultimately, the airport travel and the actual pricing is set system-wide by each airline. And they do take things into account, you're right. But ultimately, if we're competitive in that set and we're efficient in pricing out what we do with the airport for the future, I do think we'll end up with a great product, whatever that may be, and happy customers, the airlines, that are providing a great service.
Steve, you wanted to jump in on this.
Yeah, I would just add on to something I said earlier, which while, yes, Southwest is going to be one of the biggest drivers of this conversation, the voters of Kansas City are going to have a trump card one way or the other, because for the city to issue the kind of debt that's going to be associated with this project, it's going to go to a public vote. So the residents of Kansas City definitely have a say in this too.
Okay, I think that's right. Jeff, you got another question for us?
Yes, and this goes along somewhat with what you've just been talking about. In the category of opportunity costs, what happens if we don't do something reasonably quickly? It's not all about growing Kansas City, it's also about keeping the businesses we have.
Okay, who wants to jump in on that? John, you got a follow-up?
Well, yeah, I'll jump in. When you say reasonably quickly, no airport project is completed reasonably quickly. I mean, if it were approved today, we're still talking years and years and years before even a major renovation opens, much less a new terminal. So I think we are looking at the 2025, 2030 type timeframe realistically. So when we act, we need to be looking not just at the current age of the airport, but what will the airport look like in 15 more years or 20 more years as we look at this and we decide what is best for Kansas City.
Okay, we have. I see a sign from our fact checkers. We have something coming in there. What do we have, gentlemen?
Yes, we had two facts that we wanted to report on. A comment was made that KCI isn't convenient if you have to leave a secured area to use the bathrooms. Aren't there restrooms in all secured passenger waiting areas? And we verified, yes, there are. You have to go to, they don't make it easy to find, but you can go to the maps that are on the flykci.com and expand the terminals sufficiently and find bathrooms in all of them. Also, why don't we have numbers available for fixing the older problems at the airport? They are available in the ATAG final report. See under terminal rehab projects baseline, there's a numbers given on improvements to the airport for a 10 to 15 year lifetime. The estimated cost of that project would be $365 to $460 million.
And those numbers are from about 2 years ago, aren't they?
Correct. Yes, that's it's from the okay. ATAG final report.
Okay, anything else?
That's it for now.
Okay. Let me ask a question, and this is what surprised me when I looked through all of this information, that looking at the different options, it would seem to me that somewhere along the line there would have been a cost estimate on the different, in other words, if renovation works, okay, or if renovation is an option, I should say, because we can argue whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing, it would seem to me that before people could make an informed choice, they would want to have an idea of what that would cost. It may not be what you prefer, but anybody here have any sense to why we don't have that kind of information? And we have an estimate of a new terminal of, you know, 1 billion to 1.2, or maybe it's 800 million to 1.2, but somewhere in that neighborhood, which presumably is easier to do because you know what, you know, building something new, there are other terminals that have been built probably of this size, so presumably they've got it. But what about, is this part of the process, or is this part of the process been ignored?
Well, we did have, and I believe those were the numbers he was just speaking of. There were numbers ranging from the high threes, low fours, to, you know, $500 billion range.
But what did that do?
That was for everything that was on the engineer's checklist of these are the things that we need to fix. But that was ripping up the streets, putting in all new lines, replacing all that infrastructure that hadn't been touched before. Basically, doing everything that they didn't renovate when they did the interior renovations before.
Okay, but if I were a passenger coming to KCI after that was done, would it be the same deal?
You probably wouldn't even notice anything unless there might have been something with baggage handling or something, which may or may not. But they've been tweaking around with that now anyway. But But what's interesting, though, is we had those numbers before. So you had, let's say, a loose number of $500 million, and you had a loose number of $1 billion for a new terminal with the last numbers we saw, and then this meeting, you know, a few months ago where they said, well, now we're thinking that a new terminal is cheaper than a renovation, but we can't show you the numbers. Yeah. Well, that's why people are kind of going, what?
It seems to me that that's why I asked you about what the renovation numbers addressed, which clearly did not address everything that a new terminal addresses in terms of, you know, ambience and shops and all kinds of other types of, you know, the environment would be a little, in other words, theoretically, passengers going to a new terminal would know they were at a new terminal as opposed to what we're saying. So that, and I don't know whether that's the difference, I'm just kind of curious. You have another question for us?
This is just a very practical one, and
those are allowed. That's okay.
See if this panel can answer it. How will passengers and flights be affected by renovation or new construction?
Anybody?
Well, I think that looking at even the more superficial, the flooring, the lighting, all of the renovations that were done previously, there was certainly a multi-year impact of that renovation. It was done in phases. I think it was as well organized as possible to make it as least impactful on the flying public as possible, but there was certainly an impact. I think anyone who flies through any airport that's undergoing a massive renovation or infrastructure changes, there are significant impacts to the flying public during the construction period. Now, that's just a piece of that puzzle, and I think what was presented or at least discussed in some of the public discussions was a new terminal would fundamentally fit where Terminal A currently is located. So in theory, it could be constructed independently of the operations of Terminals B and C, at least generally speaking to the flying public. So once again, I think that there could be an impact, a construction impact, when you're doing major renovations and major construction work to Terminals B and C versus maybe less impact to a new terminal, but that's just a piece of the puzzle.
I agree with John that a new terminal being put where Terminal A is would have minimal impact on B and C. However, when we discussed the renovation, what they said they would do since A has been shut down is that if there was a plan developed that was we're going to renovate the existing horseshoes, they would basically start with A. A would become one of the newly renovated terminals. It would be completely separate. When that was done, they would move the airlines from the next terminal be renovated over to A, shut that terminal down, and do the same thing. So the impact on one version of renovation versus new construction would be probably the same.
Okay, and we're getting near the end here, so are there any other fact checks that we need to talk about? If not, okay, then I'm going to use my prerogative as the moderator to ask the last question. Right now, the airport makes money, okay? And in fact, it makes enough money that at certain times, as our host pointed out, they can actually lend some money to the city, although the city does pay it back, theoretically, and so with interest. And so, you know, the question really is that do we run the risk here of whatever we do, whether it's a significant renovation? And again, many savings have been accomplished with the refinancing of all the bonds. Interest costs are down significantly. I mean, it seems to me that all the financial things you would do are being done in terms of good stewardship here. Now the question is, but we're making money on the two airports. What's the risk of turning that around? Because if we're not making money on the airports, if the revenue is not there to support the revenue bonds that are going to be issued to pay for this airport, while it may be true that they are not general obligation bonds of the city of Kansas City, it causes an enormous problem for our community. So I'll let you each take a crack at what you think the likelihood is of our being able to do whatever we have to do and still keep things on an even keel.
That's been an ongoing concern all the way from the get-go. One number that I saw thrown out early on was that it would basically add a $50 to $60 million annual debt load to the Aviation Department budget, which I think is about $120 million. Now, I know if I did that in my household, I would no longer qualify for a mortgage. So it's the question then becomes, where did the $60 million come from? So if you start, you can only raise landing fees so much. They focus quite a bit on concession revenue as, oh, well, we're dead last in concession revenue. If we have these, if we put in all these food courts and restaurants and, you know, put a Joe's Kansas City barbecue every 20 feet, we would have all this concession revenue. But even if you made it into the middle of the pack, that just means that's $5 million a year, and that's before you pay your concession operator, who, interestingly, we never invited the concession operator to the task force meetings to ask whether or not they felt that we needed more concessions at the airport while the Delta restaurant above, you know, their gates empty all the time. So there was the sourcing for that revenue was always problematic in terms of where it was going to come from.
John?
I would say that's why we're going through this process, that as the fact checker mentioned, the $500 million approximately baseline number, and as Kevin mentioned, $500 million is just infrastructure that the passengers would probably never see. $1 billion or so, somewhere in there, has been thrown out as a potential new terminal number. I think significant renovations are have to be somewhere in between, most likely. And I think as we look at that, we have to be fiscally responsible. We need to look at it, but we also need to look at the vast majority of those bonding costs are going to be the burden of those landing fees. And once again, I think we do have to be very careful in that we're not outpricing our peer set and outpricing the market. But if we land in the middle somewhere, I think we can improve the airport, add some level of improvements, be it a new terminal or a major renovation, and still be fiscally responsible within the bonding capacity of the aviation department.
So you want to jump in?
Well, airports, or really any kind of major municipal project, they do have the tendency to have cost overruns, to go over budget, to take longer than would be expected. And to kind of go back to what I said early in the program, when I came from, you know, I grew up in Denver, and so I saw all of that happen when they replaced Stapleton with Denver International Airport. And the one of the risks that the city runs that in the bond market is, while an airport revenue bond, to my knowledge, hasn't gone into default, one of the risks that cities have when they have major issues with bonded projects is a reputational risk among investors who buy these things. So I mean, that could be one of the lingering effects that would probably take place beyond, the consciousness of a lot of Kansas Cityans, but that could be a problem long-term in terms of doing projects down the road.
Okay, I see that Jeff has one more question he wants to ask, so go ahead, Jeff.
Okay.
Last question.
This is a good last question, too. In your opinion, gut feeling, in 5 years, A, KCI will have a new terminal, B, KCI will be renovated, or C, we will still be discussing the issue.
Okay. Steve.
This is a really tricky one.
Yeah.
My gut feeling is there's going to be a plan that's going to be presented. It's going to be presented to the public. The public's going to vote on it. And unless the city does a significantly better job of selling this thing and presenting better, more accurate data on why this thing is needed and making a convincing case, it might go down at the polls. I want to caution that I haven't seen this with my own two eyes, but I've heard it from enough independent sources. But there's been some polling that's been done, and my understanding is that the polling is not good. 60 to 70% against range is what I've understood. And I think a lot of that, I think that has to do with a couple of things. I think there's an attachment to KCI due to what we talked about earlier, the convenience. But I think that's also due to the kind of the disastrous rollout of this over the last 2 years, publicly.
Well, I would certainly agree with Steve that I think that it's a tricky answer. That in 5 years, I would like to think that there is a clear, open, public process, that real, factual numbers are put out there, and that we find out what is most effective, both from an operational standpoint and from a cost standpoint. And that is then brought to the public for a vote. And if it's correct, then I think that it would be approved. But I tend to think that sometimes our history of making great leaps forward like clockwork every 30 to 40 years, I think in maybe 5 years, we may still be, unfortunately, discussing this.
Okay. Well, you know, okay, so we have
I'll be back here in 5 years.
Okay, well, we have two non-politicians, and neither one gave us a precise answer. So, Kevin, maybe you.
Oh, no pressure. I agree with both these guys.
That's the ultimate answer.
I think barring some new major aha moment, I think there will be a new terminal proposal put on the ballot that'll be voted down, and then we'll be back to talking about it.
Okay. Well, first of all, in closing, I want to tell you that I'm grateful to each one of you for participating, and for the audience, for you for attending. And I want to do what we do every time we have one of these. We believe in civility. We believe in our civility bell so much that we present each one of our panelists with an engraved civility bell. So, Jeff, if you want to come up here, and the reason for that you have this bell is we ask you all to put it in your office or your home, wherever it's more appropriate. And when someone gets a little steamed or a little uncivil, just hit the bell, and that's the way that we try to make our community a little more civil. Now, if you didn't get your fact check or your question answered tonight, you go to American Public Square on Facebook, and we're going to follow up and try to get answers for you. I want to thank all the volunteers from American Public Square for helping make this work tonight, as well as, of course, again, thank the library, Crosby, Carey, and the entire staff that did a remarkable job. Kim Jacobs, our executive director, without whom none of this would ever happen. We have a couple upcoming events. If you give me 30 seconds, and I'll get you out of here. We have a series called Faith and Fellowship. It's going to continue. Its second event's going to be on the 10th of December at Village Presbyterian Church. We will look at religious literacy, what we don't know is hurting us. And the panel is Rabbi Mark Levin, Imam Suleiman Salam, Evan Russell of Redeemer Fellowship, and Helen Stringer of Kansas City Oasis, moderated by Reverend Brian Ellison. On the 20th of January, which Crosby alluded to, 2016, we're going to continue the series here at the library, looking at streetcar and urban transportation in Kansas City. On the 28th of January, 2016, we present our second dinner at the Square of the Season, discussing the evolving nature and changing roles in the contemporary American family. And it's moderated by Kansas City Councilwoman Jolie Justice. And for more information, or you want to register for any of these things, go to AmericanPublicSquare.org. Finally, I want to leave you with some words that I like to end these things from Bill Bishop and Robert Cushing, who wrote a book called The Big Sort. It goes like this. In a country that is dividing by economic prospects, by years of education, by the look and feel of what constitutes a family, and by political persuasion, we continue to believe that there might be a more important message we all need to hear. The message people living in a democracy must understand more than any other message is that there are Americans who are not just like you. They don't live like you, they don't have families like yours, and they don't think like you. They may not live in your neighborhood, but this is their country too. Thank you all very much.